Welcome back to a very special episode of the Esquire Q&A podcast. I'm Ashish Menon, and today we've got a very special episode with one of the funniest creators out right now. Noel Miller is in the cut, and we're going to talk to him about his brand new first ever stand-up comedy special, which is streaming right now on his YouTube channel. Tickets are now on sale for his new supply tour dates early next year, so you can catch him in a city near you. Without further ado, here's my interview with Noel Miller.
All right, first off, I gotta tell you, dude, it's a really funny special.
Thank you.
Yeah, dude, I honestly, like, I didn't know what to expect. And I asked for early access just on a whim, just to inform my questions. And I was like, this is a special.
Appreciate that.
Stop crying. Tell me about picking the name. It's obvious why you called it that, Post Watch. And it's a great name. It is a super, like, fitting name for the special. But did you have any other titles in mind while you were creating the hour?
Yeah, well, this is a tough one to answer because, you know, the phrase is very integral to, an important part of the special. But, I didn't actually have any other names. This one kind of happened naturally, one, because of the material, but two, as I would do the show, that phrase, it's just really funny how many people heard that growing up and how just common that phrase is. So I don't know, over time I realized it just kind of was powerful in and of itself. So it seemed like an easy choice, honestly.
It really was an easy choice after watching the whole thing. No spoilers. Just it is a perfect name for it. But your special is self-directed, and we know that you're well equipped in that department with all the music videos and short films that you put out. A first special, though, it seems like enough pressure as it is. Is there a reason that you wanted that to be a part of the endeavor that's under your control, or did you always assume off-rip that you'd be directing your special?
Yeah, I kind of assumed, just because I wasn't, definitely there's a lot of pressure when you're making like a big creative piece like that, but I figured that I'd ultimately want to decide, kind of how it was shot, where it was shot, and I just wanted the experience of being able to produce my own. So anytime I have an opportunity to like learn more as a director and just about creative production, I take full advantage of it. And so yeah, definitely it was an added layer, but I had my go-to crew, and it made it smooth. So it wasn't that big of a task, like on the day. It was great.
You've been vocal about wanting to make a movie someday, and you've spoke about how watching Talk to Me by fellow YouTube creators made you realize what a daunting process that would be. Did directing your special make you more or less interested in actually making a movie? Is that like comparing apples to oranges, or were there lessons learned?
Lessons learned for sure, but yeah, I think they're two totally different things. I will say making all the promotional material for it, that definitely inspired me to pick back up on pursuing a film, and it got me gelling on a concept almost instantly. So I think I might try to do something indie very soon. I would say they're very different, so I wouldn't associate my experience with the special with being able to tackle a film. But nonetheless, it did give me a bit of confidence in sort of taking on like a big task and filming something that is long, that is longer than 15 minutes per se. So if there's anything related, maybe it's that bit for sure.
And even just watching the promos, it's so cool to see your brain work in the sense of It sort of like struck me as stand-up special promos or trailers don't really work. And what does Noel Miller do with that sort of challenge?
Oh man, thank you. That's funny that you say that, because I had like a lot of struggles with how to promote it. And I think what's tough about stand-up trailers is they remove so much context from what the point of it is. And it's hard to advertise even like a film where a film is a film trailer and you're taking kind of like bits of the plot. Stand-up special is like a lot more than that. So, or not more, but it's just, the tone and, you know, the nuance of the actual performance and like the points you're trying to convey, if you kind of take them out of sequence, sometimes it can just, it doesn't capture what you're trying to present. So yeah, I think going the route I did, was like an interesting like solution to like a problem that I feel is really difficult to solve. Hats off to all stand-up, you know, trailer editors and everyone trying to promote their specials. It's a very tough task.
Dude, I think you absolutely nailed it though, because prior to watching the special, like I watched that first promo video and I was like, oh, he's clearly about to show us a side of himself that we've never seen before. And what does that mean? And then I watched the special and I get the context and I'm like, damn, this is a good ass promo. But in your special, you joke about how it's a lot of your audience's first time watching stand-up comedy. Like, did that inform the way you write your jokes or how you structured the hour at all?
It informs some of the material, but I definitely just, you know, stand-up is stand-up. And there's... you still have to, you know, stick to the craft and you can't like trick your way around it. So as far as like writing the jokes, kept that like as authentic to me as possible. And, you know, the way I learned and how I did coming up. So yeah, didn't change the structure too much. But yeah, it did inform some of the material and just like a funny observation that I learned over time. You know, I actually didn't realize that when I first started performing again, that I didn't really factor that it was some people's first time seeing stand-up. And so acknowledging that kind of just opens up a door and it enables people to be comfortable.
On your Twitch stream over the pandemic, you coined this turn up on tragedy motto and spoke about a friend of yours telling you the importance of perseverance in your early life. Can you tell me about how a younger Noel found perseverance in himself while being a bedless college dropout at your dad's house?
The only I guess caveat I'll add to that, it was actually an apartment that he and I were splitting. I don't think I've ever actually detailed that, like that it was me and my dad splitting an apartment. That's something I had talked about like early in my show, like in the first few shows I kind of told some stories about that. But that's a great question, man. I guess at that time I was pretty aware, like where I was like financially and my projection as far as like where I was headed given my situation. So I think a lot of my perseverance came from the fact that there wasn't much to look forward to. So it could only be up from there. And, you know, I still had life left to live, so it'd be worth pursuing. And I think I always had enough like conviction that one day I could accomplish, you know, some of my ideas.
A lot of people may think that Noel didn't, you know, make it until your mid to late 20s, but they didn't see the come up of like audio engineering and being a developer all those years. Like, can you tell us about a quote unquote slower come up and how that is different than like coming up in the TikTok world? Cause that's super interesting to me.
Yeah. I think, when I became a developer, you know, as far as like money was concerned, it was not looking good. And I found my way to development kind of on accident. It was like, you know, actually through my wife, Alina, she was working at an advertising agency at the time. And at that moment, I was trying to build a website because me and some old friends were trying to start like a small production company. We had no idea what we were doing. And it's pretty bold to try to start a production company when you have no money and no clients and barely any gear. But so I was ambitious to say the least. But Alina was working as an advertising agency, and she was kind of talking to some of the developers there. And she said, you know, I feel like, you know, you're not too far off from these people in the way that they think. And I think, you know, you're smart enough to do the job. And so when I eventually became like a kind of like full stack-ish web developer, at that point, I thought I was doing great. You know, I had like a decent salary and I had like made a career from someone who, you know, I didn't finish college. You know, I was thinking, all right, cool. I'm set. And so I think what that overall allowed me to do was like live life that other people, you know, that you're, I think kind of thing you're supposed to live, at least like in the American experience, you know, I got to hit all those beats. And so with the come up kind of happening later, I think I got to really like appreciate it. And I did not take it for granted one bit. And you know, that slower burn to like success and entertainment, it gives me a lot of points of reference. So if I ever get in my head or I'm overthinking stuff, it's very easy to kind of point back and go, well, you came from there to here, so you're doing all right. And you don't have to be like perfect today, kind of thing.
Yeah, you've definitely come a long way since performing at like an open mic for six people where a guy does a getting arrested prank and completely ends the open mic. You know?
Yeah. That was a weird experience.
For you personally though, like, do you feel like you have like quote unquote made it? Like if so, like what was that realization for you?
Yeah. I think that term is, I think people associate made it with like, you know, like super duper stardom and, you know, like truckloads of money. And I kind of define made it as just specific goals. And I would say I definitely hit a good percentage of those goals. I just kind of have those remaining big, big aspirations, you know, like try to make a successful feature and, you know, just kind of other like, you know, maybe like sophomore and junior comedy specials, you know, that are well received, you know. Now I'm working on those kind of like the top more difficult end of my goal list. But yeah, in a way I would say I've definitely arrived at a point that I'd always dreamed of kind of landing on, which is just getting paid to be creative. It's a super mm-hmm. tough thing to accomplish. And so to be here is awesome. I think to answer your question though, like when that hit for me, I think it would be in the middle of last year when I started hitting clubs again and I was like writing a new hour. It really, it meant a lot that I could kind of put up flyers in so many different cities and every single one of them would blow out, you know, like, you know, whole weekend sold out. And I think it meant a lot in that when I do those shows, people saw what I was trying to do and they were massively supportive. And I thought, man, this is super special because they're kind of coming to see like my individual ideas. And it's, you know, to get people out of the house to like pay to see someone talk is a tall order. And so for people to come out and support, I think that's when I really felt like I was in a good spot.
I interviewed Mark Norman when his special came out and he says the same exact thing. Like, you know, you've made it when you can go to like any city and like sell it out.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a really, it's a surreal thing. And it's also given me something that I'd always like hoped, which was, you know, I wanted to be able to like travel and kind of like see different walks of life and like try to understand those walks of life, and stand up has enabled me to like scratch the surface on that. And so, you know, overall it's an incredible thing.
Has doing the actual special made you think about other goals that you have in stand-up specifically? I know you brought some up, but I heard you say that you want to perform more on stages where you're unknown to the audience. Is that something that you're still after? And are the traditional like milestones something that you still care about? Because you took a different route, but you know, for example, getting past at the Comedy Store, do you care about that at all?
Yeah, I think that stuff is, it's important. And I think, you know, what's kind of amazing is like since, you know, that thing like you're kind of referencing and you know, to now, it's been kind of surreal when I'll pop into clubs and people either working there may recognize me or you know, maybe the booker kind of like knows of me. And I've even had comics, you know, just kind of tap me on the shoulder and say, hey man, you know, I follow what you're doing, like you're doing great. And so I think that was something that felt further away but now it feels a bit closer. I think like getting past at clubs is important, but also I just think showing the community that like you care about it. You know, for me, stand up is not something that I was told to do. Like, I just genuinely love it and I care about it, and I cared about it before all the internet stuff. So I think above all, like, that's like the most important thing for me to get out there is like, I don't treat this like a cash grab or something. It's it's something that it is a craft to me, and like, I intend to like get sharper at it over time.
When speaking to Billboard about your music process, your producer Amon said he has a very interesting story to tell, and it's about time that he tells it. It seems you felt the same way with the special, because you really open up like you never have before. Is stand up like the medium that you find it easiest to open up like that? If so, I'm curious why.
Yeah, I think because stand up gets to be 100% what I want it to be. And there's no influence of like, there's no pressure to do it like for money or for, you know, like, man, I got to do this to like keep the lights on, which is a privilege like through and through. I think it's easy to open up because I get to sort of like craft like the points and things I want to get across. And, you know, I think stand up has the benefit of bombing. You know, bombing is seen as like a negative, but really with stand up, like, obviously bombing can feel terrible, but I think with stand up there's like that evergreen that you can try to say something again, and whatever point you're trying to make, whatever joke you're trying to get across, there is like, you do have the benefit of time. And so I think opening up on stage just becomes easier, because it's not like when you film media for like YouTube or something else. It's like the first thing you say gets printed and it gets put out, and you've heard other comedians say this. So yeah, I think in that way it becomes easy to open up, because you can give little shades of what you want to say and then evolve it to the thing that you want it to be.
Like, physically, it's almost like something that you work on slower and slower and build on. Yeah. To create something larger.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, you know, the set for me has changed so much. You know, there's stuff now that started as like a off comment that I made on stage, and then that kind of like evolved into me like thinking about it more. And sometimes I would like, you know, in developing it, I would like tell a joke, and then I would tell this funny reaction that happened to it to random cities to like kind of see how they react to that story. And there's like kind of like a weird, you know, just ever like evolving process there that you know, it can just draw out some really really funny, like unique moments, which in turn you can give back to the people.
Yeah, I mean, speaking about like opening up, you've opened up in your music too, or even talked about how it's hard to open up on Bus Back on your Push EP.
Yeah.
That's sort of like the other side of like that TUOT thing though, right? Like, it seems like your first inclination in the face of tragedy is to find the funny. So I'm curious, are you able to like turn that comedy brain off of being on in your regular life, or is that in itself something that you have to fight?
I would say maybe in years past it was harder to turn off. I think these days I'm a bit more comfortable, like, just like, you know, acknowledging my feelings or whatever, and being a bit more, I guess, vulnerable, if you had to choose a word. I think Push is funny because it was like the other extreme, where I was used to just like kind of like being goofy all the time. So I think I went for something that felt like really dramatic and serious. And I think that helped me kind of like find that middle ground. So yeah, these days, not too hard to kind of like sit with whatever feelings I got and talk about them. Don't need to like use the humor to get behind or in front of stuff so much.
It's not like when you lose your engineering job early into your career and you're like, yo, I made this song called Deadbeat, you know, like feeling it like that. So it's definitely, yeah, it's cool to hear that you're doing that now. With music though, in general, like, you've given us like some fire punchline bars. Like, I'm trying to think off the top of my kids dancing in the walls like the Hype House.
Yeah.
You're not hearing him. But like, yeah, great punchline bars and even some like hard hitting talk that shit style tracks like Pacemaker. Are you looking to release more music, and what direction do you think that you're leaning in for future releases?
There's definitely going to be like some music, you know, I hesitate to say how much, just because currently I'm very focused on stand-up and definitely want to be kind of digging my heels into like the director route. I think music is something like I did in high school with my friends, and I've always done it growing up. So it's always like kind of there. So yeah, I can't say like I have any plans for like, you know, full albums in the near future, but you know, I got music friends that try to like push me back into it casually. I think with rapping specifically, it's just fun to like kind of scratch the punchline itch and just like say, you know, funny, like out of pocket stuff.
Yeah. You know, like you said, it's always there. It's you could almost say rap shit like twins. What I mean by that is I just had to, you know. But you know, like in that same vein, dude, I hear that comics want to be musicians and musicians want to be comedians a lot, but you're in a weird place where you're able to do both successfully. Like, what do you think it is about these two career paths that the one side is so deeply interested about wanting to do the other?
I think they both romanticize each other's work. I think comics maybe want to be musicians because from the comedian side, I think music just looks a lot cooler. You know, it's more exciting. When your comedy doesn't work, it's fucking horrible. Like when you have a room of people just staring at you, it's like abysmal. But I think comics forget that happens to musicians too. So, but I think fundamentally, I think comics view music as maybe like a little bit lower pressure, and maybe because, you know, when music comes out, you know, you kind of get to know that it works. So if you're a successful musician, that means people like your music and they're going to come see you. And I think a scary thing as a musician too is you don't get the benefit of stand-up, which is you get to try stuff over time. And I think musicians maybe think being a comedian's dope because I think comedians kind of appear like they're just up there being themselves. And maybe musicians feel like they're constantly like, you know, putting on a persona, or it just takes more out of them. And maybe it'd be easier to just get up there and talk. But I think they both have both things like suffer from the same tropes. And so I think it's just like a grass is greener situation. Music looks cooler, that's for sure.
yeah, it definitely does look cooler than... what else is going on? Yeah, I mean, but yeah, like is you do both though. So is there like a difference in how you approach, for example, writing a comedy song for a TMG project versus working on a solo Noel rap song?
Yeah, I think my personal music, I've tended to skew a bit like, I don't know, like vague and maybe a bit dramatic, and I think I'm a bit choosier with it. And then I think with TMG, I'm just, my focus is just more what's like the funniest thing I could say right now. So yeah, they're definitely different schools of thought.
Yeah. It's not vague though, dude. Like it's just, you're still thinking about the whole TikTok generation of it all. Like you do a little work and you figure out what you're talking about when you're talking that shit on your solo stuff. But yeah, like, so like being a creator, reading comments, you hear the thing of like, read 10 great comments, only care about the one bad one. Being all over the country and being at this for years though, you have a considerable fan base that you come face to face with on a weekly basis on tour. Can you tell me about like any fan interactions that made you feel the weight of how beloved you are? Like, has that happened for you?
Beloved is a, you know, that's a big word.
I know, it's a crazy word, but just humor me.
This not to like cop out or whatever, but I genuinely feel like there's a couple scenarios that, you know, happen often that are pretty pretty amazing. I mean, first of all, if they're reading this or hearing this, you know, massive thank you to all the people that support what I do. But yeah, I think I One, when I just perform the shows and they're there, and then especially the people who just will wait hours for me to like pop out of the venue just to say what's up and like take a picture or whatever, you know, that's always pretty just, you know, it's a great experience, but also just a great reminder, like how much some people really like enjoy what I put out there. And that's kind of like a big reason I stopped like doing meet and greets. And, you know, if people are willing to wait for it, like I'm not going to charge them to just take a picture and say what's up to me. Like, you know, I'll just do that. And as like a bare minimum kind of thing. But I think I also feel it when I run into just different people in different cities and they kind of have like random stories like, oh yeah, I saw you in Philly and I went to the Saturday Late Show and that person like, you know, this and that. And it's kind of like this cool thing where they'll jog my memory and then we kind of share this like mutual experience. And, you know, I feel that they really like care about what I do. And so I think it's particularly just like running into people on the streets and then seeing them after my shows. It always just reminds me like, you know, how much just this group of people loves what I do. And it's very surreal every time.
Yeah, I think the moment where I sort of figured out how crazy the fanship was with you guys was, I think just through like researching you guys, my algorithms changed. And dude, the TikToks of like you and Cody and your friendship is so like there was something on my For You page where there's a song that's used in an edit of you guys. And it's like, there's like multiple videos of like girls watching the edit and filming that of while they're at the concert, while the song is playing. So I'm like, oh, you don't care about Matty Healy doing his thing. Like that's a different sort of level though. The thing about being funny to me is the attempt in itself comes with an attempt at being liked. So like with the huge views, the approval from some of your peers in the stand-up world and the loyal fan base that you have internationally, has that cup sort of been filled for you?
I think, yeah, I don't think I strive to necessarily be liked. I think a lot of my, what I strive for is I hope people like enjoy what I'm putting out. But I think trying to be liked is like a dangerous slope. Like it's a slippery slope, because then if you're not like being authentic to yourself kind of situation, then maybe you're putting on something that, you know, just isn't true to you. And then the media you start putting out, you don't feel like it reflects who you are. And then you're kind of in this weird space where you're like, oh man, I'm doing something cause I feel like I have to, not cause I want to. So I think a good aim is like, for me, that I try to go for is, do people seem to be enjoying it? You know, if some people don't like it, that's all right. I think that's a good sign. You know, if what you're making is liked by everyone, I think you got to question that too. So, I guess like in terms to answer your question, like in terms of like people that enjoy what I do, I think, yeah, I think I've definitely found a group of people that enjoy what I do. So, now my focus is kind of like giving them new, fresh things to look at, and just try to, you know, keep them entertained.
And what's cool about you too is like what you do is such a wide, vast look into the creative things that you put out. With all the different mediums you've worked in, you've really cemented yourself as like a Renaissance man or kind of like the internet's Donald Glover, you know? But having your hands in so many different pots though, do you find that it creates like more mental clutter and burnout possibility, or is it more a system of you being able to follow your inspirations across these different mediums?
Yeah, I think the internet just causes things to move so much faster than they did before, you know, and like I have obviously a big window into that, and I have a window into like traditional media. And, you know, the tough part is when you're on the internet, let's say like, you know, podcasting becomes a popular medium and then a lot of people start doing it. So I think a big key to my creativity is just trying to, how can I comfortably like break convention, you know, without making it being like all my eggs in one basket situation. So like with the TMG set, you know, the podcast landscape is really growing. A lot of people are doing it. You know, that was like, to me, an opportunity. How can, you know, my exercise like maximum creativity to like potentially bring our show something that is like, you know, vastly different from everyone else. So then that's when I came up with the ship. And, you know, from there, I think I just try to keep creative and keep working on different things, because I think they all kind of like feed into each other. And when you're working in different mediums, you can always take something from one and apply it to the other. And you can kind of get really cool, just like features that you can add to, you know, whatever you're trying to put out that you may not have otherwise thought about, just by working on one singular thing.
Mm-hmm. I've heard you say that the key to having a successful set and stand up is starting with something that you're passionate about. And I think that really informs all the creative work that you release. From getting to ride on the top of a car on some Tom Cruise shit for the Crow music video to creating and hosting your own like game shows, what's been your favorite project to work on over the years?
The special is like, you know, bar none, like I think my biggest like accomplishment and my favorite thing I've worked on like in the last year and a half, because it's much more than the special. You know, it's all the places I got to go, all the different things I got to see, and you know, getting to tour internationally, like all that stuff like changed me and grew me as a person, and so I'd say yeah, that's definitely up there. I would say, you know, maybe second to that right now would be like my Hot Laps project. But, you know, I would put like there's like two next to the special that I would say I'm really stoked about. It would be the Hot Laps project. And then yeah, definitely the Lumberjack short film. That was like really fun because, you know, that was me like trying to take advantage of a brand deal in like the weirdest way possible. And so I think to like to kind of make that on a whim, that was like just a really I don't know, it was a great experience. I felt that was me trying to exercise like maximum creativity, and it was just like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I definitely love the way that you do that. And especially even like working in the brand integrations with like the Lumberjack video, or even like the Broke Bitch music video or Sophia. It's like such a creative way to work in a sponsorship, being like, oh yeah, this looks good, here's why. Like,
yeah, you know what I mean? Interesting problems to solve. How do you pay for it?
Right. Yeah, exactly. I'm just curious about this. Like, what is it about game shows and like reality TV that fascinates you so much? You've given us so much content over the years in that sphere.
Yeah. I think like between, you know, like Cody and Noel Do and Find That Link, I think they're just kind of the run and gun nature of it is really fun. And when you're doing something that's scripted, it's very like dialed in. You're trying to get in there and get like a specific tailor-made, you know, performance and look and feel, and you're really trying to craft something. But I think with the reality side of things, it's very in the moment. And I love the feeling of like hitting record and like just not knowing what it's going to be.
With scripted things, a successful shoot is everything that you planned going to plan. But in reality, it's like the natural sort of situation of the moment creating that clickable thing.
Yeah.
That's wild. I've heard you voice your concerns about like the do what works world of algorithm chasing on YouTube. So like, how do you know what to focus your energy on creatively? For example, deciding to do the struggle for like a one episode special versus getting back to making Hot Laps or starting the Tit Chronicles as a series.
Yeah, I think I just try to keep a lot of ideas like percolating. It does make it hard to pick, but I think in that way, I'm always trying to choose what feels like really authentic for the time and what feels good for that moment. and like what feels good in my career. I'm very privileged in that, you know, I've had like a lot of success in different areas. And I think TMG and, you know, my YouTube channel, it allows me to kind of hit those, you know, maybe topical moments and, you know, short form content. It enables me to get all that stuff out there and kind of like play the algorithm game. So when I have time to be creative, I try to dial that up to like 1000 and, you know, try to, again, take advantage of something not needing to be pressured by numbers or money or performance. And obviously you take a risk because sometimes you make stuff that not a lot of people like, but I think it's good to always maintain some avenue where you're trying something new and you're just like kind of exploring.
At least for me and other people that I see in the comments on your videos, I feel like it usually does pay off. You know, usually I'm seeing like, y'all seeing this production value, like in the comments, like every time. So as a fan, I'd say that we're definitely, you know, appreciative of all this different stuff that you're doing. And I'm definitely excited about the new season of Hot Laps. Did I see Daniel Ricciardo in the guest chair?
May have, man. You may have. Yeah, you may have. That might be coming out very soon.
Very cool. Yeah, he's done some stuff with Esquire Middle East. He's super generous with his time. So I'm so hyped to see how you guys interact. Getting back to like on stage though, you have like a really original style. Like I noticed that watching it, and like even the physical bits that you do, like the family computer stuff and everything. What are some of your stand-up influences? Do you have like a top three specials of all time?
I wouldn't say I have like a top three specials, but I definitely have people that like massively inspired me. I think this is like kind of I would say, you know, this one's a bit morbid, but one of my good friends growing up, he passed, but we used to love, he introduced me to Robin Harris. I loved watching Robin Harris stand up so with him. And so at the time when me and my friend Barry would watch Robin Harris, it was just kind of like for laughs. But I would find myself going back to Robin Harris like over and over, and I think Robin kind of like always inspired me to he always, you know, his presentation was like he was really saying something that he felt, and his physical comedy was always just like hysterical. Like I felt the combination of his like, you know, burning passion for it, whatever he was saying in that moment. It could be something innocuous, like he's making fun of someone's fucking haircut, but then the way he'd like kind of tag it with physical comedy, that always like was just like so funny to me. And I think just growing up, I was always kind of that way. Like I'd always like act stuff out and try to make people laugh by being physical and acting things out. So when I watched other comics do it, that kind of like encouraged me to double down on it. But yeah, I'd say Robin, a lot of Bill Burr. Again, what I like about Burr is it just what he's saying seems very like true to him and what he believes. And I think that's the hardest thing to be in stand up is like authentic to like who you are. It's really easy to get caught up in your idols, and every comic talks about it, like mimicking who they looked up to. And, you know, I'd always try to, I'd always like look at the best of the best and see how they accomplish their voice. So at least from my perspective. Mm-hmm. And then outside of that, you know, I would say like, I was inspired like by Patrice O'Neill. And then, Eddie Murphy and Chris Rock were some of my first, specials that I owned as gifts, and Chappelle. So, I'd say they all contributed in their own way. Yeah.
No, I really honestly appreciate that answer a lot, because, you know, I've heard about the GOATs that you mentioned, you know, Bill Burr and Chappelle and Patrice and things like that. But I've honestly never heard of Robin. And I didn't, you know, I thought I was a huge stand-up fan before this conversation. So I'm definitely going to look him up, and so will our audience.
Yeah, Robin is, you know, he's a spicy guy, you know. He willing to get his foot in the crowd's ass. And
yeah, it gets a little wild.
Yeah, most definitely. But you know, Robin is just hysterical to me. Yeah,
perfect. That's what I like, dude. What about top three albums of all time, like music?
Dang.
What do you think? We got time. We got time. What's on Noel's Mount Rushmore?
Of albums, jeez. This is man, I've literally never thought about this.
Okay. I mean, we could go like top ones from the past couple of years if you want, instead of top three if it's a lot of pressure. But I mean, I feel like you got good answers regardless.
Yeah, I guess I kind of think of albums as like phases in life. And I would say like it's tough to say like an album that I listened to heavily in this period of my life is like maybe more important than this, which I know is like just like super meta, but
I completely love that answer. Like that's A-okay. Cause for me, like I'll tell people like The Life of Pablo is one of my favorite Kanye albums. And I always hear like, bro, what? And I'm like, no, it's like when I was listening to it, I was 16, like it was integral. So whatever answer you're trying to give me, dude, I'm ready for. What's important to Noel album wise?
I would say, I think Toxicity by System of a Down, I'd have to like put up there.
Yeah, that's a banger.
Yeah, I think that like, you know, obviously for that time period, I think that, you know, that album hit for a lot of people, but yeah, it just like, I think it just hit at a pocket in my life where, you know, it was just, I was just like young and like kind of captured those like.
Yeah. Angst. Yeah. I got older cousins. So yeah, I'm in the exact same boat, you know?
I have to say Monkey Bars by Sean Price. That's like, you know, that's one I listened to just on repeat. Sean Price is a rapper that I just grew up listening to a ton. And then recently, I got to shout out my guys, Paris, Texas, man, Midair. Love those dudes. They are, they're just, you know, great, great people, great humans, great artists. Their their music is something that I found in recent years that I just like really connected with and would kind of listen to a lot. So yeah, I would put it at those three.
Okay. Those three. Yeah. I definitely expected Paris, Texas on there, but, but yeah, I've never even heard of Sean Price. So I love that you're putting us on to new shit. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man.
So yeah, you know, it honestly does. It feels like a douchey question to ask somebody that's doing so many things. But like, what's next for Noel Miller?
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I don't look at it like a terrible question. I think it's, you know, what are you working on next? And
it's a little bit like that's a nice little group of eight things. What else, monkey boy? Like,
No. I don't take it that way at all, man. I just got a new tour, man. Calling it New Supply. You can come see me, noelmillerlive.com. I'll have all new dates. I'm gonna grind out a new hour. Really stoked too. I've been sitting on some material that I've been wanting to talk about, so I think it'll be just like awesome, like clean slate. Really stoked for that. And then you know, I'm working on the TMG network a ton, and we got some stuff cooking over there, and that's exciting. And then Hot Laps, you know, I got a brand new car to debut, and I want to put some people in it. So I would say those three things. And you know, I'm hoping to tackle a feature next year. I might go crazy. I want to go indie, but like self-funded, but we'll see.
Wow. Wait, so is there a script in the works?
No, well, I want to, you know, I'm, you know, I'll put an asterisk next to that. Okay. One, I have an idea and I have parts of a script, but you know, don't want to overpromise, but I like to aim high.
This is big. This is big. And you know that the fans love Hot Laps too. So that's amazing. You ever thought of, this is like, just like something that I might want you to do, like nothing you might've ever thought about, but what about like a fight companion, UFC?
Oh, come, man.
On, I mean, Noel Miller, get some guests on, Sugar Sean maybe.
No, man, I mean, like, you know, MMA is great. Obviously it's been a, massive point of interest for me, but I think when it comes to like sports reporting, there are people that are very dedicated to the sport, very qualified. So I'm down to jump on and chat about it, but I think there are way more qualified, you know, journalists in that realm than I, but I'm definitely always down to sit and, you know, chop it up about MMA. It's always good.
Yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I heard you say that you wanted to have like all of your shit together as a kid before experimenting with vices. So maybe just like the next era of Noel is just like DMT reviews. Who knows?
No, we'll see, man. I don't know. Man. I haven't needed it so far. So maybe I'll keep it clean, you know?
Amazing. Okay, perfect. Yeah, that's what Esquire Middle East loves to hear. No, I'm kidding. No. But thanks so much for talking to me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks for taking the time. This was great. Yeah, I mean, you do your research. It's awesome, man. I really appreciate it.
Everybody go watch the special. It comes out 24th of October, 5 p.m. PST.
Yeah, yeah. So maybe by the time you're hearing this or reading it, it's out already. So
it's out. So go stream that. Go watch that. It is honestly top specials of the year, maybe the last couple of years too. I really, really enjoyed it.
Wow, thank you, man. That's high praise, bro. I appreciate that. You know, I don't know what to say. That's a lot. Thank you.
I'm actually on r/standupcomedy pretty often, so
no, man. It's a top special for you, man. I'll take it. I appreciate
it definitely is, dude. So yeah, everybody go stream that. Thanks so much, Noel.
Hell yeah. Well, hopefully we do it again, man.
Appreciate